If you're new to Carrubbers, this is one of our guest night series that we're doing throughout the year. The first Sunday of every month, we try and tackle a big conversation. That's what we're looking at this year, big conversations. And tonight we're looking at, does my body really matter? And tonight it's a little bit of an opportunity to interact. You'll have opportunities to discuss some questions on your tables, a chance to reflect on some of the topics as we listen to some great music from our two-member house band here tonight. And hopefully I'll share some thoughts from the Bible about this topic, which will hopefully help you think about this a bit more clearly. But to start with, let's listen to the band singing a song about So Will I. This kind of gets us into the theme of where we're going this evening. Thanks so much. We'll hear more of them later on. So this evening we're exploring a question that is relevant to every single one of us. Because we're asking the question, does my body really matter? And this gets to the center of what we think our purpose on this earth is, what we're here for, what we are made of. And given every single one of us has a body, there are a lot of different ideas about how we are to think about our bodies. One thing I think that characterizes every single one of our experiences, though, is that we experience some alienation to our own bodies. It feels like our bodies are often not what we want them to be, or they don't work like we'd like them to. Some people experience the extreme discomfort of gender dysphoria. People have this unshakable feeling that they've been born in the wrong body. That's a heavy form of alienation to your own body, isn't it? But there are other forms of alienation to your own bodies too. Maybe more generally, they just don't function like they used to. They're starting to break down. Or maybe they don't look like the way you'd want them to. If you're a human being who's gone through puberty, you can probably say, yes, I felt that way. This is not how I want my body to be. But tonight, I want us to pay attention to three places where we see the world's thinking about our bodies. Firstly, I want us to think about wellness culture. And what I mean by that... Sorry, Fraser, you might have to click that for me. Thank you. What I mean by wellness culture is everything that goes in with the fitness and health industry. You think of all the gyms and all the programs that are set out so you can transform your body into being something incredible. But also, there's the whole other host of things that goes along with it. The diets, the food, the supplements. But even then, there's even more to it. Because celebrities and social media influencers are always trying to push certain practices, certain products that can help you transform the way you look and the way you can live. And even more than that, because certain looks are elevated and seen as the ideal, people want to change them, change our appearance so that we can look like what we think we should be. If you were to take a trip to Turkey as a man or a woman, you could come back a totally different person. New pearly white teeth, a fresh head of hair for those who have lost it, or even more extreme surgeries to alter parts of your body. On the surface, you may argue, well, in a sense, this is just taking extra care of your body, isn't it? Surely it's actually caring for the body too much if you're doing all these things to try and enhance it and look after it. Well, that can be the case in a measured sense, taking care of our bodies. But this culture reveals that at its heart, there's a deep dissatisfaction with our bodies. We're alienated from them. All the procedures and surgeries show that people are not satisfied. They're not content with their bodies. They undergo risky surgery, extreme dietary and exercise regimes to achieve a certain aesthetic. That shows that we're not content. To be obsessed with the body does not tell you that you're happy with it. The theologian Beth Folker Jones says this, "The cult of the young body, the veneration of the airbrushed, media-produced body, conceals a hatred of real bodies." So that's the wellness culture, where we see this idea of an alienation from our body seeping through. But the second area takes us into the realm of science fiction. This is a movement called transhumanism. And whilst it may not be well known, transhumanists have grand plans for you and I, for the future of humanity. Transhumanism, it can be described this way. Transhumanism shares many elements of humanism. And a respect for reason and science, a commitment to progress, a valuing of human or transhuman existence in this life rather than some supernatural afterlife. Transhumanism differs from humanism in recognizing and anticipating the radical alterations in the nature and possibilities of our lives, resulting from various sciences and technologies, such as neuroscience, neuropharmacology, life extension, nanotechnology, AI ultra-intelligence, space habitation, combined with a rational philosophy and value system. I wonder if you could pick your way through all the jargon there, but basically it's saying science is our hope. If we trust in science, it's going to take us far beyond we ever thought possible. That's going to lead to life forever. Those who are believers in transhumanism, they reveal that there's an intense dissatisfaction with their body because in reality they're just flawed biological machines that need to be updated. They need to be altered. They need to be changed so much so that we'll become post-human. We won't be human anymore. We'll be something next level, something evolved. They have a great hope in the future, a place where we won't die, we won't suffer, and we'll just keep exceeding our limitations. That's the hope for transhumanism. It's maybe a lot more obvious here with transhumanism how this is a complete alienation to our bodies. There's a deep discontent with the way we are because we just want to move beyond it. It's a limit to be passed through. Moore is very optimistic. This is what he says at the end of his essay about transhumanism. He says, "Humanity is a temporary stage along the evolutionary pathway. Let us blast out of our old forms, our ignorance, our weakness, and our mortality. The future is ours." As I've said, it's quite obvious how we're to view our bodies in this perspective, isn't it? We just need to move past it, evolve using human technology, and we'll get to the next level. These bodies are pathetic. We need to move on. The third area that we see in our society is probably the most controversial topic of our culture right now. There is heated and passionate debate about our bodies in relation to our sexual identities with people who identify as LGBT. And the conversation in our culture particularly revolves around the T part of the acronym, the transgender ideology, the transgender conversation. And this is an intense conversation for a number of reasons, and so we need to enter this with sensitivity and with a listening ear. Each of us will have opinions, and maybe very strong ones. Others of us may be hesitant to actually speak and voice what we think because we're not unsure of how people may react. Well, I found this really helpful from the Christian author Preston Sprinkle, and yes, that's a real name. He says this whole conversation is about people, a diverse group of beautiful people created in God's image. People who are often marginalized, misunderstood, shamed, and shunned by those who don't share their experiences. People who are infinitely valuable in God's eyes. So it's a conversation about people. But he does say that we need to listen to what the Bible teaches too. He says this conversation is also about concepts. We need concepts about human nature, male and female bodies, and what it means to live according to the image God created us to be. So in this conversation, we want to show absolute respect and love towards people. And we also want to show, though, that the Bible brings true hope for the alienation we feel towards our bodies, and especially those who feel this extreme level of alienation. Speaking broadly, the transgender experience is when someone who experiences an extreme discomfort with their body that they were born in, and they feel that they are at odds with their biological sex, that they have to be something different. And this causes intense distress. They describe it as being trapped in a body that doesn't feel like it's yours. Rebecca McLaughlin says this really helpfully too. Those who have not experienced gender dysphoria cannot really hope to grasp it. Sometimes we love people best by acknowledging we don't understand. Such a profound alienation to one's body, that would be something nobody chooses. But in our culture, there appears to be an increasing number of people, many of them being teenagers, coming forward saying that this is what describes their lived experience. Their internal sense of self does not match their biological body. And so some choose to go under medical treatment, surgery, procedures to try and bring their internal sense of feeling and their biological bodies into harmony. So those are the three big areas, I think, in our world. There's many more, but Let's focus on these tonight, where we see the alienation to our own bodies in our world today. So let me leave you to discuss for a few moments. Think about these three areas. Do they share anything in common about how they view the human body? Take a few moments to discuss, and I'll jump back up in a few minutes. If you have a few more questions to get going with, don't worry. Please pick up where you left off in the next break. What we've thought about is these three big areas so far, and I wonder what you thought they all shared. Well, I think there's one thing that underpins all of these conversations, and it's all to do with how we view the human body and our person, our personhood. And it actually spreads across much broader than these areas we've identified. It actually kind of covers a lot of the ethical questions in our day. But the American scholar and author Nancy Piercy, she puts her finger on what is underlying all these views. Sorry, Fraser, you have to do that for me again. Thank you, brother. There we go. So you see there's a division here. There is a person and a body, and there's a dividing line in between them. Piercy explains what she means by this. This is personhood theory. Personhood theory entails a two-level dualism that sets the body against the person, as though they were two separate things merely stuck together. As a result, it demeans the body as extrinsic to the person, something inferior that can be used for purely pragmatic purposes. And we can see how that works out in the areas we've identified so far, can't we? There is a sense of self, and then there is our body. And when we feel there's an incongruence, some kind of disagreement with how we feel and what our biological reality is, what takes priority? What tells us who we truly are? Is it our person, and actually we can just adapt, edit, and alter our bodies to fit with our inner sense of feeling? To think that way would mean that the body has no real purpose in itself. It becomes just a meat machine that we can use to fulfill our purposes and desires. It doesn't really have any bearing on who we are at all. Well, the Bible tells a different story, a better story. It tells us that we have a body and a soul. We have a person and a body. That is true. But they are an integrated unity. Every single human being is an embodied soul. And we know this instinctively, don't we? If I was to come up to you and punch you with my left fist, you would say, "Sean, why did you punch me?" I couldn't then say, "Well, it was my fist. It was my body that did that." That doesn't work, does it? No, Sean is the one responsible for the punching. We are an integrated unity, an embodied soul. At the beginning of the Bible, we're told this truth. In Genesis 1:27, "So God created mankind in his own image. In the image of God, he created them, male and female. He created them." And what God created back then and what we are now is human beings, flesh and blood. Not an immaterial spiritual soul alone. No, an integrated unity of body and soul, that is a human being. And it goes on to say in Genesis that everything God created, including male and female, man and woman, was very good. God created it to be this way, and it was intended this way, and it is good. Now, you may have an impression of Christianity that it discourages pleasure and actually hates the world and our physical bodies. It's all about restricting and imposing limits, and there's actually a hatred of the physical body that is involved. Christianity is all worried about the spirit, all worried about the soul, something that's immaterial and transcendent. You may have in your picture, may have in your head a picture of some sleep-deprived, food-deprived hermit who has inflicted wounds all over themselves, and that's what Christianity is teaching, that the body is a bad thing. How can Christianity teach our world about the goodness of the body? Well, hopefully Genesis starts us on that right line. God created our bodies, and they were created good. And the rest of our answer is going to come from three places in history. It's going to come from Christmas, Easter, and the end. In these three places, we'll discover the importance of our bodies and the value of our bodies and how God sees them. Because in the person of Jesus, who is the main event at every single one of these places in history, we discover the goodness of our bodies and the value of them. And actually, in this story, we find the hope for a reconciliation, how we feel alienated from our bodies, how Jesus is the one who can bring us back into harmony and peace with them. And the way I want us to explore this is from an incredible part of the Bible. It's from a letter called Colossians. The Apostle Paul, he wrote this letter to a group of Christians in what is now modern-day Turkey, in Colossae. And he takes them straight to this mind-blowing bit of history of Christmas and Easter, of when God stepped into our story. So I'm going to put it on the screen here, and I'll read it for us. The Son, that is Jesus, is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn over all creation. For in him all things were created, things in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible. Whether thrones or powers or rulers or authorities, all things have been created through him and for him. He is before all things, and in him all things hold together. And he is the head of the body, the church. He is the beginning and the firstborn from among the dead, so that in everything he might have the supremacy. For God was pleased to have all his fullness dwell in him, and through him to reconcile to himself all things, whether things on earth or things in heaven, by making peace through his blood shed on the cross. Once you were alienated from God and were enemies in your minds because of your evil behavior, but now he has reconciled you by Christ's physical body through death to present you holy in his sight, without blemish and free from accusation. It's a pretty mind-blowing passage of scripture, isn't it? But let's start with Christmas on our journey, because it's not far away, to be fair. We've only got a couple of months to get ready. And this passage is all about Jesus. And the truth that we're to see here, that God the Son, Jesus, took on humanity. God stepped into the human story and took on flesh. Jesus Christ is fully God, but also fully man. That's what it says right here, that all the fullness of God was pleased to dwell in Jesus. That is the reason why Christmas is such a huge event. That's why we celebrate it every year across the world. The baby that was born and was laid in a manger, the one that shepherds and kings came to bow down before, that was nobody else than God come in flesh and bone. And this tells us a huge amount about the significance of our bodies. They have so much dignity, so much values. They matter so much that God the Son came down to be one of us. I wonder if you've ever had those jobs where it just feels completely pointless. Maybe you're at the bottom rung of the ladder in a company or a role. And you feel it's so insignificant. Nobody really cares what you're doing. It feels such like a menial job. And so you think, this is a pointless, worthless job that I've got. But then imagine if the boss or the CEO or the owner came down and started to work alongside you. That would probably transform the way you viewed your job, wouldn't it? It would make you see the value of what it is. In a much greater sense, we are shown the significance and the value of the human body because God the Son, Jesus, he has one. Because Jesus came as a human being, he is the image of the invisible God. We're also shown that he came as a sexed body. He was a man. He wasn't something, he wasn't a third kind of human being. He was a human being who was a man. And again, that tells us that there is value in the way that our bodies are. Our sexed body tells us who we are. And we cannot understand ourselves without seeing the biological reality of what we are. Maybe this whole idea of God taking on flesh, maybe you thought Christians were just, you know, there was just something symbolic or we're making up a metaphor. No, Christians, we really believe this is true. And maybe that's surprising to you. So how does this idea of God taking human form perhaps change your view of the human body? Take a few moments to discuss. So we've talked about Christmas, about how God coming to earth to become human is the most incredible moment in our history. Colossians goes on to say that in him, in Jesus, the whole fullness of deity dwells in bodily form. Now, this may tell us that our bodies matter. They value this, they're this valuable to God that he would do this. But what about the alienation we feel to our bodies? How does it help us with that? You know, we still experience suffering. We still feel like our bodies are letting us down. There's so many that feel trapped in the wrong body. And many of us will not treat our bodies with appropriate care, or will actually want to change it and enhance it to make it seem more beautiful or more useful. See, this alienation that we feel to our bodies, this is a real thing. Now, the message of Christianity isn't that you just need to ignore it and put it aside. No, it is real, and it needs a solution. Our bodies are breaking down. They do malfunction. They can be disfigured. They can be damaged. And every single human body has an end date where the body will shut down. All of us will die. And that idea really disturbs us in our world, doesn't it? Remember the transhumanists. They seek to try and find eternal life in technological solutions. A famous method, which you may have come across. Sorry, Fraser, you might have to click it on for me. Thank you. They may have to try and freeze themselves. This is cryogenic freezing. And what happens here is at the moment of someone's death, they are frozen, and I think they're stuck in one of these big vats. Don't know how you feel about that happening to you. And they do that because they hope that in the future, they'll be defrosted, and whatever it was that killed them, that will be fixed and healed, and they'll continue to live on. Another idea, which is even more sci-fi, is that someone's brain could be uploaded to a computer. So the idea is all the data from your brain will be uploaded and then in the future re-downloaded into some physical form. See, there's a reason that we have such a hope in these technological solutions. We want to live forever. We have a hope that we can continue. But the Bible teaches that the main reason that our bodies are so frail, that they're so weak, is because there's a cause behind all of this. Sin is the root cause behind all of this alienation and this malfunction and this death that eventually comes to our body. Sin is what leads us to death. And you can see this kind of cause and effect in our world today, can't you? In very obvious ways. You can see how selfishness, greed, lies, and violent anger can lead to people being killed. You know, we see wars still happening all over our world for those very reasons. Sin does lead to death in a very obvious way like that. But sin is much deeper than just the very obvious evil that we see in our world. Sin is behind all the problems that we face here. Sin is the reason that we all die. Because sin is when we fail to place God at the center of our lives and we put ourselves there instead. Others become second to us. They are just there for our use, to fulfill our own desires. God, we are wanting to ignore him and place ourselves on his throne. Colossians 1:21 explains this more clearly. Once you were alienated from God and were enemies in your minds because of your evil behavior. Primarily, sin is offensive to God. It insults him and it dishonors him. But it also has drastic consequences because it leads to the hurt of everyone around us. We are alienated from God, and so that relationship is utterly destroyed. It's broken. And this affects every part of our lives. We have problems with each other, this world, this creation. So much so, we even have problems with our own bodies, which is what we've been thinking about tonight. What do you need when you're alienated from someone or something? Well, the answer is you need reconciliation. You need to be brought back to a place of peace and harmony with what you were alienated from. And that is the answer and the hope that Jesus brings. Because what we have in our hands is a very, very human problem. Our sin that causes this alienation is squarely a human issue. It's our fault. And what we need is a human rescuer, someone to step into our shoes and do what we cannot do, someone to redeem how we think, how we feel, how we act, how we desire. We need someone who is human from top to bottom to bring us out of the pit that we find ourselves in. And that's Christmas. The baby born is 100% God and 100% human being. It cannot be any other way. Otherwise, we wouldn't have our problem solved. We need a human fix to our human problem. But we also need divine power to fix our problem, because it's a big issue that we have with the divine because of our sin. And so our journey to reconciliation begins with Jesus at Christmas, him stepping down, showing us that our bodies matter so much to him that he wants to reconcile them with God. But how does he bring reconciliation? Well, tomorrow morning, I've got a plumber coming to my house because the main valve that supplies the water to our entire home is leaking. And Priscilla, my wife, said to me, "Sean, this is not a DIY job. You really need to get some help for this." So I've called a plumber, and a plumber is coming because he's the perfect man for the job. He is the one who can fix my problem. It's a plumbing problem. I need a plumber. But when he comes, it's going to be no good if he just stands in the kitchen looking at the water valve. Now, I've got the right person for the job, but he needs to do something. He actually needs to fix the problem. Well, the same is true for Jesus. He came, God in human flesh, but he didn't come just to hang around and spend time here. He came to do what needed to be done. Listen again to this part of Colossians 1. "For God was pleased to have all his fullness dwell in him, and through him to reconcile to himself all things, whether things on earth or things in heaven, by making peace through his blood shed on the cross. Once you were alienated from God and were enemies in your minds because of your evil behavior, but now he has reconciled you by Christ's physical body through death to present you holy in his sight, without blemish and free from accusation." In case you missed it, what you just saw there was Easter. This is the moment where Jesus reconciles heaven and earth. Our bodies are included in this. He reconciles all things to himself. And he does this by shedding his blood, his physical blood on the cross. He did that. He gave his own physical body because he needed to make a sacrifice on our behalf to bring us to peace with God. There is a penalty for how every single one of us have treated God. And if we were to pay it ourselves, we would end up for eternity separated from God. But Jesus steps in and he pays the price. And that's what Easter is all about. Jesus going to the cross in our place to give us peace with God. And that brings us to peace, not only with God, but the world around us, with one another, and to our own bodies. Easter isn't telling us that what needs to happen is that we need to die and escape from this world. It's not about getting rid of material reality and existing on some higher spiritual existence where you just float around. No, because what happened at Easter was that Jesus died, but then he came back and rose to life in a physical body. He showed us that death and decay would not win in the end. We'll think about that more in a moment, but I want you to reflect on this question. How does who Jesus is and what he did bring us peace with God and actually everything else? Spend a few moments discussing. We'll have one more question to chew over. But what I want us to do now, though, is to focus on the end. We've thought about Christmas and Easter, but now we're to think about the end. We are hope-hungry creatures as human beings. And it's no coincidence that seemingly in every philosophy there is a hope for something more, something beyond. Even Max Moore, who said that he didn't believe in some kind of afterlife, he believes in a technological one. He claims to believe that in science there is a way to escape death, to defeat mortality. And even in wellness culture, people try and defy the influence of aging by injecting themselves with Botox or using substances to try and get rid of any appearance of getting older, holding on to a younger life at any cost. And even in transgender ideology, we have this idea that there is a hope of a resurrection, hope of a new life. Rebecca McLaughlin, who we heard from earlier, she points out that when someone transitions, tries to change their physical appearance to match with their internal sense of self. All the language around that can be one of resurrection, of taking on a new life. For example, if you were to use someone's name, their pre-transition name, instead of their current name, the phrase for that is called dead naming, because that person that was before is now dead. They're a new person, they have a new identity. I think what Rebecca is pointing out, there's a hope for resurrection in all of these philosophies. There's a hope for something new. We are hope-hungry creatures as human beings. We long for a new life where we can be at harmony with our physical bodies, with reality. And we're right. What we truly need is reconciliation. We need resurrection. But the Christian hope for resurrection is greater, stronger, and it's true. We've mentioned how Easter is so important for this conversation because Jesus didn't leave physical reality. He rose to life in a physical body. I'd encourage you to read the Gospels if you haven't, the eyewitness accounts of Jesus' life, and see what he did when he rose to new life. It was very physical, eating meals, spending time with people, being able to be touched and held. It really was Jesus who walked out of a tomb 3 days after he was executed. And that is the reason for our hope as Christians. This really matters when we look to the future, when we look to the end. Because the Bible teaches us that if you trust in Jesus, if you have faith in him, then you will have life after death. You will rise to new physical, bodily life, just like him. When Christians are talking about the end, when they're talking about the future, the new creation, they're not talking about sitting on clouds floating around with harps, but a new world with physical bodies, without any of the sin and the sickness and the alienation, all the problems that we face on this earth now. Later in Colossians, it's put like this. When Christ, who is your life, appears, then you also will appear with him in glory. We're told that Jesus will return. He will appear, and he'll be real. It'll be physical. And if we know him, if we depend on him and trust in him, we will appear with him too. He came to save us, all of us, our mind, bodies, and souls. And when he comes back, we will be resurrected to new life just like he did. And this tells us that our bodies are so important, so valuable, because they're important to God. When Jesus came to be our rescuer, he came to save us. He came to save all of us. What this teaches us is that our bodies are good, that we've been created in the image of God. And so our bodies are gifts to be received and enjoyed. And although they are weak and although they decay, our hope is not going to be found in surgery, technology, or treating it as a machine to try and adapt to our desires. Instead, our hope of reconciliation to our bodies is found in being reconciled to God. Because if we know Jesus, we have a hope for a perfect physical future. And the guarantee of that is an event that happened 2,000 years ago when Jesus rose to life. And if we have that, then we can begin to treat our bodies with the same dignity that Jesus did. They are so valuable that Jesus himself died for them, for us. As we close then, let me end with some words from Nancy Piercy. As we face the social ills of our own day, we must move beyond the denunciations that can sound harsh, angry, or judgmental, and instead work to show that the biblical ethic is based on a positive view of the body as part of the image of God. The goal is not to win a culture war or to impose our views on others, but to love our neighbor, which means working for our neighbor's good. The Bible story for our bodies is a better story. I hope you agree. But as we finish, let me give you a chance to respond yourselves. Does knowing the hope of Christmas, Easter, and the end change how you view your body? Take a few moments and then we'll hear from the band and then I'll wrap us up. We're going to end our time listening to one final song from the band. And this song is about resurrection, the great hope of new life in the future. So let's listen in. Well, let me thank you for coming out this evening. I hope it's been a stimulating conversation. Please feel free to keep chatting away. I'm sure there's more things you can cover on this topic especially. But I wanted to highlight three books that I kind of stole a lot of useful things from. One in particular, Love Thy Body by Nancy Piercy, is phenomenal. So, so interesting and helpful. So I'd strongly recommend that one to you. But also Preston Sprinkle wrote particularly about transgender identities and things like that in Embodied. And that's the middle book there. And then lastly, Rebecca McLaughlin. She covers a lot of topics, not just this question. But if you want a kind of a short read on this question, let me commend that book to you as well. But thank you so much for coming. Please feel free to finish off the snacks and the drinks and to keep chatting over things if you've got more to talk about.